ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Divrena Bhakti Yogena Yajet Purusham Param. This is from Bhagavatam 2.3.10. The devotees, the jnanis who are known as Mokshakama and the karmis who are known as Sarvakama are all aspiring to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Even when one performs yajnas as stated here, Kriya Kalape, he should always remember that the demigods are but the agents of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the worshipful Lord is Vishnu, Yajneshwar. Thus, even when different demigods are worshipped in the Vedic and Tantric sacrifices, the actual goal of sacrifice is Lord Vishnu. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 9.23, it is said, Yepi anya devata bhakta yajanti shatayanvita tepi mam eva kantaya yajanti avidipurvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but is offered without true understanding. Thus, the worshippers of various demigods also worship the Supreme Lord, but they do so against the regulated principles. The purpose of the regulated principles is to satisfy Lord Vishnu. In the Vishnu Puran 3.8.9, the very same thing is confirmed.
Varnashramacharavata purushena parapuman Vishnu raradhite pantha nanyantato shakaranam.
Here it is clearly mentioned that the karmi, jnani or yogi, in fact everyone worships Lord Vishnu if he is actually expert in knowledge of the Vedas and Tantras. The word Govindaha is very significant, for it indicates the devotees of the Lord. Only the devotees know perfectly that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is all-pervading. Within the material energy, he is represented by the five material elements as well as the mind, intelligence and ego. He is also represented by another energy, the living entities. And all these manifestations in the spiritual and material world combined are but representations of the different energies of the Lord. The conclusion is that the Lord is one and that He is expanded in everything. This is understood by the Vedic version, Sarvam Khalv Idam Brahma. One who knows this concentrates all his energy in worshipping Lord Vishnu.
Om Agyar Tivirandhasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Vitangena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Kadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Madhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So I'll read the translation one more time. My dear Lord, your universal consciousness of all five elements, the senses, mind, intelligence, false ego, which is material, and the Paramatma, your partial expansion, who is the director of everything. Yogis other than the devotees, namely the Karma Yogi and Jnana Yogi, worship you by their respective actions in their respective positions. It is stated both in the Vedas and in the Shastras that are the corollaries of the Vedas, and indeed everywhere it is only you who are to be worshipped. That is the expert version of all the Vedas. So this chapter 24 of Canto 4 is mainly focusing on the Rudra Gita, or the song sung by Lord Shiva to the Prachetas. So this Rudra Gita started from text 33, and Lord Shiva is narrating it to the Prachetas, and there is a particular sequence to it. So when it starts initially, he actually asks for purification from the Chaturviva. So Lord Shiva actually first pays his obeisances to Vasudev, Sankarshan, Anirudh and Pradyumna, asking them to purify his mind, intelligence, false ego and consciousness, because they are the desired deities of these subtle elements. So in this way, first, before even he starts glorifying the Lord, he asks to become purified from these four deities. And then he wants to be purified in the gross body. So he offers his respects to the demigods, such as the sun god, the moon god, the fire. So in this way, he is then offering his respects to the demigods and asking them to purify his gross body, which is made of five elements, the earth, water, fire, air, ether. So once he has done that, then he starts glorifying the Supreme Lord. So he starts with the physical bodily features of the Lord, and we heard such beautiful narrations of how he's describing the lotus eyes of the Lord. He's describing his high nose, his strong shoulders, and his entire body describes in a beautiful manner. And then he describes the beauty of the Lord by saying that he has a beautiful smile and he glances in a way which is very captivating for the devotees. He moves on to then describe the glories of devotional service. He says, when we meditate on the form of the Lord, that has immense, great results for the devotees. And they end up becoming devotees of the Lord. They become attracted towards the form of the Lord and they engage in devotional service of the Lord in this way. Then when they become devotees, what do they do? They associate with other devotees. So Lord Shiva is then glorifying the association of the devotees and he describes the importance of associating with other devotees. Then that brings us to text 59, where he actually glorifies the character of a devotee. He says that a devotee is not disturbed by the externals. Whatever may be happening around him, he can be neutral to that, and internally he is completely absorbed in devotional service to the Lord, completely absorbed in remembering the Lord. Then from text 60 to text 66 onwards in the song sung by Lord Shiva, it is explaining the relationship between the Lord and his material creation. So text 60 itself has described Brahman, the impersonal feature of the Lord. And then Lord Shiva in 61 mentions the various energies of the Lord. He describes the Lord, Maya and Jiva, which are the different energies of the Lord. Then coming down to today's verse, which is 62, as we heard, the text, it mentions the universal form of the Lord and the various elements, the material elements of the universal form and Paramatma. And eventually it mentions that even the demigods may be worshipped, but the eventual goal of, ultimate goal of life is the worship of Lord Vishnu. So, for the universal form of the Lord, now as we hear that in India sometimes we come across a lot of, there are divinity issues. Every now and then there is an incarnation of the God that pops up. In some state or the other, someone comes up and he claims that he is the incarnation of God. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions in mostly in the earlier cantos, especially in canto 2 of canto 2 chapter 1 in text 24, he says that what is the purpose of the universal form of the Lord? Why does the Lord display this form? So he explains that the universal form of the Lord is a material form of the Lord in which it is a sum total of all the material creation. And the purpose of showing this form was not to educate or to enlighten Arjuna, because Arjuna was already pure devotee of the Lord. But it was to help the general masses to understand the difference between a bogus incarnation of the Lord and a genuine incarnation of the Lord. You see, it stops people from claiming that they are gods, because if they are asked to then show the universal form of the Lord, they will not be able to. Moreover, all the genuine incarnations of the Lord, that are meant to appear on the earthly planets are mentioned in the scriptures. All the incarnations, they are described, and when they will appear also is mentioned in the scriptures. So in this way, as we all know that chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita describes the pastime when Lord Krishna is asked by Arjuna to show his universal form. And the Lord gives him the divine eyes, the vision to be able to see his universal form. However, sometimes the critics say that Arjuna saw the universal form of the Lord. Maybe it was just his imagination. Maybe he was just bewildered and by the whole scene of the battlefield, and he was feeling guilty for having come to this battle to fight with his relatives. Maybe he was just imagining things. And maybe Krishna wanted to deceive him. Then it is explained that Krishna and Arjuna throughout Mahabharata, we understand that they share a very lovely relationship. It's a relationship of friendship of Lord Krishna towards Arjuna and Arjuna towards Krishna. And throughout that we see that Lord Krishna is very caring towards Arjuna, and Arjuna also sees him as a friend. And they have pastimes with each other where they go together to different places. And then also it is to be understood that Krishna's mood was always to enlighten Arjuna, to encourage him to do his duty, and never to deceive him in any way. Also, and moreover, Arjuna was not an ordinary person. He was a warrior, he was a learned scholar, perfect in scriptures and in the science of war as well. And he was a leader, he was a great political leader of his times as well. So this Viraj Rupa, or the universal form of the Lord, which was shown by Lord Krishna, was not an aberration, it was not a mistake. And there are many pastimes in which Lord Krishna has shown his universal form. So which means, Arjuna is not the only one who has seen this form. There are others who have seen the universal form of the Lord. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, verses 35 to 37, describe the incident when Lord Krishna shows his universal form, just a glimpse of it, to Mother Yashoda. So when Krishna was a young boy, this one night, Mother Yashoda was trying to put him to sleep. She feeds him, and then he's looking at his beautiful face while he's trying to fall asleep. So he's smiling and suddenly he yawns. And when he opens his mouth, Madhya Yashoda is able to see what was completely unimaginable and bewildering for her. She sees in his mouth the 14 planetary systems, the sun and the moon and the stars. And she sees all moving and non-moving entities. She sees creation as transformation of ahankar, the false ego. She sees the three modes of material nature. She sees the laws of karma. And she sees the time allotted to these living entities. So now just imagine, he is just a little boy, her son, and she is trying to put him to sleep. And then he yawns, this is what she sees in his mouth. So she's completely bewildered, and she's hoping this, and she's afraid. Srila Prabhupada explains that she's thinking maybe this is a sign of another danger. She's maybe another demon will come and attack her little boy. You see, she has intense maternal affection for her son, and that becomes disturbed when something like this happens. She wants her child to be just an ordinary boy, and she becomes completely satisfied in serving him, in nursing him, in caring for him. And what is more interesting is that Krishna does it a few times to her. So this is the first time he does it to her. And then soon after, in Canto 10, in chapter 8, the very next chapter again, when Krishna eats dirt, and then he's brought to his mother, and then she chastises him for eating dirt, and she asks him to open his mouth. And he opens his mouth as an obedient son would, and guess what she sees again? The entire material manifestation the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, the seas, the 14 planetary systems, and the sun and the moon and the stars. And she's wondering, this is her little boy, what's going on? And she also sees herself. She sees Vrindavan Dham, and then she sees herself peering into the mouth of his son, within the mouth. So she's totally confused and bewildered with this. So then what does Yashoda think when she sees this? She's not very pleased when she sees this. She becomes disturbed and she wants that this will just go away. Maybe she's tired. She's arguing with this. Maybe she's just tired and she needs to rest. That's why she's just imagining things. But her boy is just normal, just like any other child. And there is nothing wrong with him. And then he thinks of what Garuda Muni told him at the time of Lord Krishna's birth, that he will be able to do some supernatural things. So she just convinces herself to that extent. And she wants to forget about the whole incident. So this was the second time when Lord Krishna shows just a glimpse of her universal form to Mother Yashoda. And then, so why does Krishna show his universal form to Mother Yashoda or to Arjuna? They are devotees of the Lord and they are pure devotees. So it is mentioned that they actually don't need to see the form. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 30, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Virat Rupa form is meant for the neophyte devotees. Those who cannot imagine a spiritual form of the Lord, those who expect that the Lord is material, He is made of matter, to give them some faith, to encourage some faith, then Lord manifests His Virat Rupa or universal incarnation. And also for future generations, to establish his godhood, to establish his supremacy to skeptics or non-believers, he manifests this form. And we also understand that Lord Krishna himself says that fools derive meaning when I descend in this material world in the human form. Abhijanati ma mura manushim tanam ashukam. So when I take a human form, fools will not be able to understand. So then to bring them to that first level of understanding that there is God and we need to submit to God, then this universal form helps. Now the third time when Lord Krishna exhibits his universal form is during the just before the battle of Kurukshetra. So the Pandavas are, as we all know, they're very gentle. Although they're kings, they're Kshatriyas. They're very gentle by nature. So they were trying to make all efforts to avoid the battle of Kurukshetra. And they were trying to make peace with the Kauravas, with their cousins. So they sent Lord Krishna as a peace messenger to the assembly of the Kurus to see if there can be some agreement that can be made so that they can avoid the war. Now Lord Krishna goes to the assembly of the Kurus and he wants to make a proposal to Duryodhan how they can avoid the war and they can come to some agreement. Now Duryodhan gets furious when he sees Krishna trying to make such a proposal. Not only does he not listen to Krishna's proposal, he orders his soldiers to arrest him and bind him with ropes. Now Krishna just smiles then, and there he then manifests his partial universal form. It is said that even that form was extremely scary. It was a ferocious form because the Lord manifests his innumerable arms. And in those arms, he had weapons that were glowing like lightning. His whole body was erupting like a volcano. And there was dazzling effulgence. And from his body came out unlimited demigods, including Lord Shiva on his chest and Lord Brahma on his brow. And then his whole body looked like the sun with the heat and the rays, the light that came out. Now Duryodhan and all the Kurus, they couldn't look upon this devastating effulgence coming from the Lord. They couldn't see this. But it is mentioned that Bhishma, Drona, Sanjaya, Vidur and Karna, they were able to look upon the form of the Lord, the universal form of the Lord. And while all this commotion was happening, As you know, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana's father, he's blind. So he heard some commotion. And then he requests Krishna to give him a vision, temporarily at least, so he can see what's going on. So then Lord Krishna is very merciful. So he grants him that temporary vision to be able to see the form of the Lord. So just mentioned that even he was able to see that partial universal form of the Lord exhibited by Lord Krishna in the assembly of gurus. And it is also mentioned that when he exhibits this form, the denizens of heavenly planets shower flowers on him. Their kettle drums and conches vibrated, which means they were also able to see the song of the Lord. So in this way, the Kauravas were bewildered, and Krishna, of course, knows now that the battle is inevitable. There was no other way out. So you see how Duryodhan, in spite of the fact that he had many opportunities to meet the Lord, to meet with the Lord, and many occasions he met the Lord, but he was so puffed up and arrogant that he could not understand the divinity of the Supreme Lord. He never would accept him as the Supreme Lord. He always saw him as his enemy and as a normal human being. And even when he had actually shown his universal form, the Yogan had just said, oh, he's just doing some magical trick. He refused to believe that he's the Supreme Lord. And then, we often hear people say that if God is present, why doesn't he come before us? But we need to understand, if he comes before us, what would be our reaction? Will we be able to understand his divinity? Will we be able to offer that standard of worship that is recognized if the Supreme Lord is personally present before us? And we will end up committing unlimited offenses because we do not have that consciousness to serve him in that mood in which the residents of the Vaikuntha planet serve him. The pure devotees of the Lord serve him. And then what it leads to offenses. That's why in this Kali Yuga, the Lord is kind enough to come in the form of deity. So in the deity form, he accepts our worship and he helps us to get started, to slowly and slowly learn to worship him, to love him, to serve him, to make him the center of our life, and to remove us, ourselves, from that center. And it is also mentioned that it was not just Duryodhana, there were so many other demons, so many other things who were present at that time when Lord Krishna was present on this earth. They also had the opportunity to see the Lord. But even they did not understand the supremacy of the Lord. They also saw him as their enemy. So in this way, those who were meant to see, realistically speaking, only the devotees of the Lord were able to see the universal form of the Lord. In this case, Dronacharya, he was a sage. So all the sages, Sanjaya, Vidura, so they were all saintly devotees of the Lord who were actually able to see the Lord. So this was the third pastime where Lord Krishna shows his universal form. And soon after this, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as we all know, chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita explains to us how Lord Krishna is requested by Arjuna. So they end up having a conversation before the start of the battle, because Arjuna seems to become bewildered. He starts to feel guilty that just for the sake of getting a kingdom, he is ready to kill his relatives and his seniors. He sees his own great grandfather Bhishma standing on the opposite side in the army. He sees his gurus, Kripacharya and Dronacharya, standing on the opposite side. And he thinks he is going to kill them for the sake of his own kingdom, for the sake of becoming a king. So while this conversation pursues, he requests Krishna to show him his universal form. And then the Lord shows Arjuna his universal form and gives him the divine vision so he can see it. So then he mentioned that he shows him the universal form, and of course Arjuna also becomes afraid because it's a very fearful form. It contains all the material elements. He sees so many faces, the Lord's and thousands of faces, all demigods. And he sees Lord as a kind of personified who's gobbling up everyone. And he sees all the armies being gobbled up by different accounts of the Lord. He sees the stream as time, and he sees all the mountains and oceans and rivers. He sees the sun and the moon. He sees the law of karma. He sees three modes of material nature, and it is a ferocious form. So he actually becomes afraid, and for a moment he is awe and reverence, and he remembers, my dear Lord Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, and yet I have interacted with you as if you were just a normal friend of mine. I have eaten in the same plate together with you, and sometimes I have made jokes at you, and here you are now, you are the Supreme Lord. So he's a bit afraid. So then he quickly asks Krishna to withdraw that form and come back to his normal two-handed form, because that is what he is comfortable with. As a devotee, he interacts with him in that form, so he is most comfortable to see the Lord in his form as Krishna. So then, here, Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan explains in his commentary on the Shloka on chapter 11, he says, even the demigods, the demons, the Indaras, the Dharmas, which means the denizens of the heavenly planets, were also given the ability to see the universal form of the Lord. They also got the benefit of being able to see it. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned that no one had ever seen this form before. The one that was shown to Arjuna was a full manifestation. And why was it shown to him? Because he was feeling guilty that he was the one who was going to kill his seniors. And he was going to kill vast armies. And he was the one who was going to be responsible for this battle of Kurukshetra. So when he is specifically shown that the universal form of the Lord is actually taking in all those armies, so he then understands that as time, the Lord has already killed them. And that's what Lord Krishna says as well. They are already dead. Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna has already killed them. So then what is there is no need for Arjuna to feel guilty. So in this way, to explain to him, to help him understand that he doesn't need to feel guilty and he is not the doer. See, because he was thinking that he is the doer, and because of his actions, so much warfare will happen. So Krishna explains to him that he is only expected to do his duty. And his duty was to fight that battle at this moment. And those who were destined to die would anyway die, even if he did fight the battle or not. So this is the fourth time Lord Krishna exhibits his universal form to his devotees. Then it is mentioned in Mahabharata that soon after the battle, one more time Lord Krishna exhibits his universal form to one sage. So after the battle comes to an end and Maharaja Yudhishthira is enthroned as the king, then Lord Krishna decides to go back to Dwarka. And while he is on his way back to Dwarka, he meets a sage called Uttanka. Now sage Uttanka, he inquires from Lord Krishna about what happened between Kauravas and Pandavas. And Lord Krishna mentions to him that the war had to take place. And sage Uttanka actually gets upset. He tells Krishna, he said, you could have avoided this war if you wanted. Why did you allow it to take place? And Lord Krishna says, I tried my best to avoid, but it was inevitable. It had to be carried out. But now, Sage Uttanka was a mystic yogi, and he actually threatened Krishna that he will curse Krishna for not having done his duty of avoiding the war. And Lord Krishna convinces him that, look, I did my best, but it was not avoidable. It had to take place. But Sage Uttanka was not convinced and he threatens to curse Krishna. So Krishna laughs and says, look, all your mystic yogic powers that you have, they come from me. I'm the source of all these powers, so you can't curse me. But he doesn't listen. So he's doubtful. He says, are you really the universal Lord? And he says, yes, I am the universal Lord. So then he says, you prove it. So then Lord Krishna again it is said, shows in his universal form. The same form that he had shown to Arjuna was again exhibited to Sage Utkasa. And then Sage Utkasa is being satisfied and he submits to Lord Krishna. And it is mentioned that Lord Krishna then grants him a boon. He says, you will never go thirsty. Whenever you are thirsty, you will find water. Now at that moment, Sage Utkasa couldn't make sense of this odd boon that Lord Krishna had given him. But after many years, he finds himself wandering around in the forest, in the desert. And he realizes that there is no water anywhere for him to drink. And he had come to a point where he would just die of thirst because there was just no water. And then suddenly he remembers what Lord Krishna had mentioned to him. And the moment he remembers his boon, immediately there are dark clouds in the sky and it starts to rain. So in this way, he is able to quench his thirst. And then now he understands the relevance of the boon given to him by Lord Krishna. So you see, these are the incidents of when Lord Krishna manifests his universal form that I could find, but there could be more. It is mentioned briefly in Lord Vamadeva's pastime in Canto 8 also that he had assumed the universal form and then he had withdrawn it. So there is also mention, it is not described in detail, but there is a mention that he did assume the universal form. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita also there is a brief mention of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had actually exhibited this form to Advaita Acharya. It was confidential, nobody else could see it, but yes, he has seen it. And there is a picture on the wall where, as you can see, we have it in a temple where the Lord is exhibiting his universal form. So there, here you go. So there are a few more incidents. There could be more, but yes, there are incidents where we see that the Lord is exhibiting the universal form. But Srila Prabhupada has explained it clearly that the universal form of the Lord is meant for neophyte devotees or for those who cannot think beyond matter, and to them, to bring them to understanding to the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. Then Lord Krishna, he manifests his universal form. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada also mentions that Lord Vishnu is the ultimate goal of all sacrifices and austerities, and that demigod worship is actually a faulty way of worshipping the Supreme Lord. So he also quotes this verse from chapter 9, verse 23, in which Lord Krishna himself clearly states that worshipping the demigod is an indirect way of worshipping me, but it's a faulty way of worshipping me. So it is because of lack of understanding that devotees worship demigods. And also, who worship demigods? So we know that demigods will give you material pleasures, material desires. So for the fulfillment of the material desires, then people worship the demigods. So there are two kinds of desires that people can have for the purpose of fulfilling their desires. So one would be to have material pleasures in this life. They may ask for fame, name, opulence, good health, good wife, good husband, good children. So all these. For all these, there are different demigods who are in charge of providing different material assets, material opulences, and they can worship different demigods. And also, to have a better life after death, to go to heavenly planets. There are some austerities or sacrifices of worship that are meant for those who want to go to heavenly planets. So, Srila Prabhupada calls them sarvakama, means they are full of desires. So full of desires, so after one desire and then another desire. So these, such devotees who are interested in fulfilling their desires, they will worship the demigods. But he says that even the jnanis, they will eventually, very rare of them, will come to a state where they will understand that Lord Vishnu is the should be the goal of all worship, not demigods. And Srila Prabhupada also explains that Just as the water, the root of a tree, and it is mentioned in Bhagavatam also, Yatra Taro Nule Anisha Chanena Tirupyanti Sanghujo Ushaka. Ram Bahar Yathev Indriyana, Tathev Sarva Haranam Achyut Icha. That just as the water, the root of a tree, then by watering the root, the trees, branches, and twigs, they become enlivened. And just as we put food in your mouth to feed the stomach, then the limbs of the body, the mind and the senses become enlivened. Similarly, by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, all the demigods are automatically pleased. So you don't need to separately offer worship to the demigods. And this Krishna Prabhupada has also mentioned many times in Srimad Bhagavatam. He gives this example that we also have this story where it is mentioned that where it is said that the whole body goes on strike. The hands and the legs are thinking that we are doing a lot of hard work, and it is the mouth where the food goes and the stomach gets to eat, whereas we don't get anything. So they decide to go on strike. So the hands decide not to move, so they decide not to procure food, and the legs decide not to walk, and they all sit there still thinking, it's only the mouth who's getting the food, why should we do any work? But soon they realize that they're feeling very weak. They're not able to do anything. Even if they want to move, they cannot move. The eyes can barely stay open. The hands can barely do things. So then they realize that it is the mouth that needs to be fed, the food needs to go into the stomach, and when it goes there, then it automatically the whole body will have the strength to do the activities. So this is how Srila Prabhupada explains that similarly it is the Supreme Lord Krishna who needs to be worshipped, and he clearly states as well, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu Mata Sarvam Pravartate. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds, everything emanates from me. So he is the one, and he says the wise person, he knows this, engaging my devotional service and worshiping me with all their hearts. So he claims that he is the Supreme Lord, he is the Supreme Being, and he is the one who is the beneficiary, and he has to be the beneficiary of all austerities and sacrifices. So I'll stop here and see if there are any corrections, questions. Yes, Krishna.
I have three questions.
Oh, three questions, okay.
Why do we need to chant on beads?
Why do we need to chant on beads? So it is said that we should try to engage all our senses as many as we can while we are chanting. So have you ever tried chanting without beads?
Yes.
So then what do you think happens?
You don't much concentrate?
Yes, exactly. The reason we hold the beads in the hands is, first of all, they are made of Tulsi Maharani, and she helps us in chanting properly. So we take help of Tulsi Maharani, she is a devotee of the Lord, and Lord is very fond of Tulsi Maharani. And the other reason why we use beads is because to stay alert as to what we are doing. So we know that we finished one mantra and now the next one we need to move on to the next beat, right? So we are engaging our sense, which is the skin, right? The sense of touch. We are engaging the sense of touch when we are chanting on beats. And we are engaging our tongue when we chant. That's why we are recommended not to chant in the mind, chant loudly. So what the tongue is saying, the ears can hear it. So our skin, sense of touch, our tongue, and the sense of hearing. Three senses are engaged in chanting the mantra, right? So out of five, three senses are engaged. That's the whole purpose why we chant on the beat, so we can be more alert. Is that right? Okay.
Just the counting.
Sure. Right? Yes.
And you can chant on Lord Chaitanya chanted on the cloth when he nodded.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to. So I think the principle of the law is counting than using beads necessarily.
Yeah.
But you can count
mm-hmm.
with a cloth And you nod at the clock, and that would count that way.
Okay. So Anand Prabhu is giving one more, he says there is one more reason why we chant on beats is because it shows so that we can count. The main idea is we should be able to count how many rounds we chanted. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the main reason why
you can chant ring beads, you can chant using jewels. Doesn't have to be beads.
Okay. So you can chant.
The main principle is counting.
Okay. So the main principle is counting, and you can chant on ring beads, or you can chant that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made beads out of cloth and he was using a cross to chant. Made beads out of cloth. So the main idea is that you should be counting your chanting.
No, I haven't noticed my chanting any better using tulsi. I don't know whether tulsi helps us to chant. I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read that anyway.
Okay, what's the next question?
If the user, the universal form is the material form of the Lord,
mm-hmm.
then why did Arjuna have to have new eyes from his material eyes to see the material form of the Lord?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a very good question, and I was also thinking why. But then, I was also thinking why you have to have divine vision to see the Lord's material form. Because even though there is this material creation, we have to understand that we are not able to see the whole of it. You see in Canto 5, Canto 5 is nothing but a description of the planetary system, the movements of the sun. And it is over there it is mentioned that there is more to this earth, and we are not able to see everything that is in the material creation. Like, for example, you are sitting in this room. Are you able to see beyond the walls of this room? So, you can say there are cars, there is a street outside, there are cars parked in the street, and there are material creation. Why aren't you able to see that? Because the walls are opaque. You can't see that. Yeah? So, similarly, even though there is a lot in this material creation, we may not be able to see it. And it's also mentioned that, for example, Lord Shiva and Parvati live on Mount Kailash. But devotees or scientists or those who go the research, they haven't spotted them. And that Mount Kailash is in this material world, in this earthly planet. And we know that there is a Mount Kailash geographically where exactly it is, but we don't see them. So why don't we see things that are part of the material creation? So what it means is that there are eventually coming from a spiritual source, correct? And and we do need the help of spirit. For example, this body is made of matter. So the minute the soul leaves the body, the matter is dead, it starts decaying, right? So similarly, to be able to see an expansion of the Lord, even though it is material, but it originates from the spirit. So we need help of the spirit to see that material manifestation. Do you understand?
Also, I was just thinking that even with our material senses, we are not able to perceive everything which is material. So one other example is, for example, our vision.
Mm-hmm.
We can only see a specific frequency of optical wavelength. We cannot see ultraviolet or, you know, so even though that is absolutely material,
mm-hmm.
still our material eyes cannot see the whole range of optics. Or even for hearing, we cannot hear ultrasonic or subsonic sounds. We can only hear a particular range of frequencies when we hear things. So that is one of the four defects that our senses have.
Four defects that we human beings have, human entities have. We are not, even with our senses, we are not able to see everything that is existing even in the material world. Thank you so much. Anything else?
And my last one was, like, if the Kauravas while Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, they were still on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But after hearing Bhagavad Gita, why didn't they stop the war?
Why didn't the Kauravas stop the war even after hearing Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield of Kurukshetra?
They didn't hear it.
So it is mentioned that Arjuna had asked Krishna to come in the middle of the battlefield, in the middle of the two armies, and that's where he spoke it. And it says that, I mean, some devotees say it went on for 45 minutes, and some say that the actual conversation was for 90 minutes. So that's how long the Krishna and Arjuna spoke to each other. They had this conversation, and Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna. But that's the thing, even if they heard it, they didn't care about it. They still saw Krishna as the enemy, because he was being the chariot driver of Arjuna. They see him on the opposite side, they see him as the enemy. They're all puffed up. Like Duryodhana, he had so many opportunities to see Krishna, to meet with him, and yet he never understood that he is the Supreme Lord. So were so many other kings who just saw him as their enemy. So you see, essentially what it means is that you can see the Lord and his divine energies if you are a devotee of the Lord. If you are a demon, or if you have demonic mentality, and if you do not surrender to Lord Krishna or Vishnu, even if the Lord is right there in front of you, you will not offer respects to him and you will not be able to see him or understand the knowledge that he's trying to give you. Do you would like to add something?
Well, it is interesting that, as you said, that Duryodhana just thought that Krishna was doing tricks.
Hmm.
So the idea of seeing and appreciating that form is requires some bhakti.
Yes.
And it's interesting that Arjuna was also Mother Yashoda, Arjuna. They were actually scared. Mm-hmm. By the, their reaction was really interesting in that they weren't particularly attracted to that form.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so horrific in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
That being able to see everything all in one place and then the time factor working and the manifestation of all the creation, but then also the maintenance of it, but then also the destruction of it. So it's quite a the universal form is quite a shocking experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
And the devotees who are in a primary relationship of friendship or, you know, service or vatsalya rasa, they don't like the impersonal form. It's too scary. And they want to see Krishna in his birth, they want to see Krishna in a form that they naturally have affection.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's mentioned that the universal form is for neophytes.
Yeah.
Those who want to appreciate God in his role as the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a very intimate kind of relationship. It's God in the office.
Fills them with awe and reverence.
Yeah. Like, yeah, well, have to, because I've got, you know, you get smashed. You get smashed anyway. We need to have some devotion to be able to see and appreciate the universal form, and for those who don't have that vision of bhakti, they might misinterpret, or they do misinterpret.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes,
So Duryodhana was never able to see the universal form of the Lord. He he was not able to see the form, but Dhritarashtra, did you say he was
able to see? Yes, he was able to see. He was momentarily granted that vision when he was able to see. You see, because Dhritarashtra was actually a pious person. His only fault, the one fault, was that he was too attached to his son, and he wanted his son to be the king. Apart from that, he was a pious person.
His attachment to his son was so severe that even when he was actually able to see the universal form of the Lord, he still was not able to sort of like stop the war from happening.
True, yes. Because he was blinded in love for his son, and that discovered over all other goodness that he had. He just wanted that one moment to be fulfilled, that his son would become the king and the rest of the world would be the king. That was his goal.
He's revealing in this almost come to stop a group ticker.
No, that was
it. Was come to pick the kids out of the fire.
Yeah.
The Do you know the story? You must the proper mention to everybody.
Oh, there is. And it couldn't be there as fixed on it, but it was so much for Duryodhana and the Kauravas. But that's why he obviously saw it a little bit of that when he says it's really just playing tricks. He refuses to believe that the Lord is actually showing him the universal form, and he just rejects it.
And which universal form or aspect of the good question is it?
Whatever the rest of them saw, the Rashtra was given to see the same.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that Krishna had a duty to the form to show the sun and show the colors. Yet for Arjuna, he says,
nobody's seen this form before. Yes, that's where. So this is where Sridhar Swami was actually.
Can you repeat
for us? So, yes, this is what I was mentioning as well, because it is mentioned, Srila Prabhupada mentions that no one has seen this form before, what Arjuna has seen. Whereas we see that Madhya Shubha has seen it twice before, and then he exhibited in the assembly of gurus, and then the fourth time he exhibits it to Arjuna. So, and Prabhupada mentions that this form, what Arjuna has seen, no one has seen it before. So then, Sridhar Swami in his commentaries, he actually explains that what the Lord had manifested in the assembly of gurus was just a minor, a very partial manifestation of his universal form. It was not the entire form. And then he also clarifies that this form is a little bit different for everybody. Like when Madhya Yashoda was trying to look into the mouth of Krishna when he needed the earth, she saw herself looking into the mouth of Krishna. And she saw Vrindavan come. So she saw the whole situation where she was situated, and she saw that in Krishna's mouth apart from the rest of the world. So it was a bit tailored to the individual who was looking at it. And of course she sees the rest of it, but then she doesn't see what is actually happening in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That is what Arjuna needed to see, to understand that he is not the doer. So in that sense, it is a little bit different, but in general they all saw the universal form, but in particular we saw those pastimes which were more relevant to them. This is what he explained.
And you know, Krishna, his relationship with everybody is different. So not everybody has the same, not everybody sees Krishna the same.
Yes.
Just like not everybody sees us the same.
Yeah.
The same person, but sometimes we think,
Yeah. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you. Granth Rashi Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.